What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Hot Shots. I'm Jedi, and with me always is Houdini and Deepaw. What's poppin', boys?
It's St. Patrick's Day. Bracket came out. I'm ecstatic, because if y'all remember, best sporting event, March Madness was my 1-1.
You know, I think one of my favorite things to do, you know, I get to work from home now, which is great, but the Monday after Selection Sunday came out, and I would just print like 14 brackets on the company dime and just fill them out for the first hour and a half of work. It was great.
Well, Houdini, you better be happy, because all we're talking about today in this episode is March Madness. So if you're excited for that, make sure to tune in for this. Selection Sunday was today, as you mentioned. Houston, Purdue, UConn, and North Carolina were all placed as the number one. Do you guys think that they got this right?
I do. Surprisingly, I actually do think they got this right, and I think all are really deserving of it. But I will say, any one of these teams can be beat. It just is a matter of when and how. But there's just, as of right now, when I looked at like the two line, I think the one seeds are correct.
I agree. You know, there's some talk about maybe Tennessee over North Carolina, but I think what North Carolina did, beating Duke at the end of the ACC regular season, they won the conference regular season, ran into a buzzsaw in NC State, and they beat Tennessee. So I think they deserve that one seed over the Vols.
Yeah, it'll be interesting for sure. That's going to be starting on March 19th, a few days from today. But who's the underdog of this March Madness tournament? There's always one, or maybe a few, but who do you guys have for this year?
Like, when you say underdog, let me just clarify it. Are you talking about like a Cinderella story, or are you talking about a team that's not ranked as a one seed, but could be like a 2, 3, or 4 that has a shot?
Second option.
Okay. So like a 2, 3, or 4 team that has a shot that's kind of gone overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go, it's kind of two, and they're both in the Big 12. And they both played each other, and it's Baylor and Iowa State. I think Iowa State is really good. I think Baylor is really good. And I think when you look at like the mold to win in March, you need good guard play. You got to be able to play defense, and you have to be able to take care of the basketball. Iowa State checks all of those boxes. Baylor's coach has been building that program for a couple years now, ever since they won the title, and they continue to kind of fit the bill for what has to be done in March. And the Big 12 this year has been really good. So I think the Big 12 kind of stands out in March, which is a scary thing, because that conference has kind of gone overlooked all year.
Yeah, at the beginning of this, and you know, even before the tournament started, I was kind of thinking the winner was going to come from the Big 12. You know, UConn's obviously a very, very good team. But the Big 12 was top to bottom, in my opinion, the best conference in college basketball. A sleeper for me, you know, Dino saw him up close and personal quite a bit. I like Creighton. Creighton is a 3 seed. You know, Doug McDermott is a hell of a coach. He's been there for ups and downs. You know, I just think their trio, they got a really, really good trio. I'm going to butcher probably some of these names. Shireman, Kalbrenner, and Alexander. They all score above 17 points a game. So if you get this team, if they're firing on all cylinders, yeah, they're a 3 seed, but nobody's really talking about Creighton, and they could actually make a legitimate run here.
Now, Cal Brand is really good. Obviously, like I've watched Creighton a bunch this year because they're in the Big East, but that team, it's weird. Creighton and Marquette are the only two teams from the Big East that made it outside of UConn. Both are really good. Mm-hmm. Both can beat anybody, but both can lose on any given night. So I like Marquette more than Creighton out of the Big East, just because I think when you have a guard like Tyler Kolek with Marquette, who is just your prototypical white point guard that doesn't do anything wrong, I like him more than Creighton's guard play. Even though I think Creighton is a really well-coached team, I think Creighton's route is probably better than Marquette's. But when you look at this year and you see that there's only 3 Big East teams, you know, those 3 are the ones that stood out.
Now, every single March Madness, there's always one thing that happens. There's always a Cinderella run. Normally, people try to predict it beforehand, but nobody is ever that successful at it. But who do you guys think is going to go on a Cinderella run this year? We talked about the underdog. Now it's the Cinderella run. Last year was the FAU Owls. But who's going to do it in 2024? And actually, just to talk about the FAU Owls, I'm a big fan of them. Go to school there. But if they win, they're supposed to face UConn. So before you answer who you think is the Cinderella run, do you think that they even a shot of going to 2.0 this year?
It's not going to be FAU. It was an awesome story last year. You could see at the beginning of the year, they weren't the same team that although it's the same team, they still didn't have the same feeling that they did during that March run. They are horrible defensively, like horrible defensively. So if they're not scoring 90 plus, it's a problem. But my sleeper, and this is ironic because holy shit, did I bash their football team a lot this year?
Yes, Colorado.
It's Colorado. It's Colorado. They're 8-1 their last nine. Obviously, they lost to Oregon in the Pac-12 championship, but they have five guys averaging double figures. And I will tell you, KJ Simpson can score with anybody in the country. And when, like I said, when you have guard play in March, you can beat anybody. The sleeper normally comes from one of the teams that plays in the first four on Wednesday. Colorado plays in the first four. That's a serious advantage to anybody going into that opening weekend. Not only to mention, they're really, really hot. So do I think that they can make the Final Four? I don't know that. But normally, team that plays in the first four ends up in the second weekend in the Sweet 16. I like the Buffs here, and that it's. I hope that makes up for a little bit of the bashing that I had on Dion and their football team this year.
Doing it for the views, Colorado. So let me go with NC State, DJ Burns. He's more of a defensive tackle than he is a basketball player. He's 6'9", 275 pounds. But if you watch NC State, the dude can absolutely ball. He's not just a big D tackle out there. The dude knows basketball. They're hot right now, and there's just something magical about NC State on an NCAA tournament run. Shout out Jimmy V.
Okay, yeah. So you're talking about the lefty tank.
The big boy, yeah.
Yeah, the big boy. Their guard, DJ Horn, transferred from Arizona State.
Also very 30, good.
Put up 32 this year, put up 31, and in the title game versus North Carolina, put up 29. He can shoot it with the best of them. And when you beat Duke, Virginia, and North Carolina to get into the tournament, this could be the story of teams getting hot at the right time.
I mean, they were 10 seed in the ACC. Just for context sake, we were talking about Pitt. Pitt was a 4 seed in the ACC, and NC State went on this run and made the tournament.
Now, before we start saying who we think is going to win March Madness, do you think UConn's going to defend their national title? Just a quick 30-second answer, yes or no?
Absolutely. The only reason why I have any doubts that they might not is because I think they got the hardest route in the world to get there. It's almost like they weren't the number one overall seed and didn't get blessed with that schedule. I think they're going to get tested early, but Dan Hurley literally built this program back from the ground into a perennial powerhouse. They have experience. They have guard play. They probably have the best 1-2 punch in the front court. I don't see a team that is better than them in this tournament.
So, yeah, you're right. Kevin Ollie burned that program to the ground, and Danny Hurley brought it all the way back. They're the best team in college basketball. It's bar none. But very rarely do the best teams in the NCAA tournament win every single time. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, there hasn't been a repeat winner since Florida with Joakim Noah and whatnot. So just, I'm a very analytical mind, and I play the numbers. I do not think they repeat this year. There's just too much craziness going to happen this year. It's a very, very deep pool. Like usually teams don't, or there's too many teams that shouldn't be in this year. There's so many teams that should have made it, but there just weren't enough spots for them.
Interesting. Well, it is Selection Sunday while we are filming this, and there have been a lot of snubs. A lot of people are pissed, rightfully so, if you're a fan of this school or if you're a player on the team, but St. John's was left out of March Madness and people are calling this a record-setting snub. Just a quick answer. Do you agree or disagree?
This is so hard because, yes, they got snubbed. However, you have to blame the Power Five conferences that the team that was expected to win the conference championship didn't win it. So there was a lot of bids that were taken away because a team like NC State took off Duke and took off North Carolina. A
couple mid-majors, so, yep.
You know what I mean? Like that's where like the conversation's a gray area, and there shouldn't be many arguments based on who gets snubbed and who doesn't. It's really hard to break down that resume.
I don't think it's the biggest, you know, historical snub. No, I don't. There are 40 or 50 snubs in the past, every decade. Like four or five teams almost miss out every single year. I think every single team could make a legitimate case of, yeah, they got snubbed and they deserve to be in. So just historically, no, I do not think it's the biggest one of all time.
Yeah, I was shocked to see that when I was reading it, but the headlines are all over the place that they're calling it a record-setting snub. But now the biggest snubs of March Madness happens every single year, and there are multiple ones outside of St. John. So St. John, Seton Hall, Providence, Pittsburgh, Indiana State, and Oklahoma were all snubbed out of the 2024 March Madness. Out of the ones that I did list, though, which of the ones do you think is the biggest snub and why?
So, you know, I'm a Pittsburgh homer. I don't necessarily follow Pitt basketball, but Pitt absolutely got snubbed and deserved to be in the tournament. The four seed in the ACC should automatically be in the tournament, regardless of what their non-conference schedule is. They had 22 wins overall this year. They beat NC State, who just won the ACC tournament. They took UNC to the brink before in the semifinals of the ACC. They're hitting their stride at the perfect time. You got two studs in Blake Henson and Carlton Carrington. Yeah, the non-conference schedule sucks, but how does Pitt know that Missouri is going to go winless in the SEC? How do they know at the beginning of the year that West Virginia, who's a big rival, is going to be absolutely terrible in the Big 12? Pitt absolutely got snubbed and deserved to be in the tournament.
I kind of just argued against it. I still think St. John's is probably the biggest snub simply because they ran through the Big East tournament. They end up losing to UConn by 5, which is a home court advantage. I won't even get into that, but like the fact that they play X amount of games at MSG and then have the tournament there, like I'm not saying it should be changed because it's not. I really think a conference championship in Madison Square Garden is the best.
Legit.
It might be, hot take, it might be the best non-championship setting in sports. I would have to I'd probably have to explain that. But they had some bad losses. They lost to Boston College. They lost to Michigan, who is down bad. And they weren't that great in the Big East. But they did win their last 6 of the last 7 games. They failed to beat teams like UConn or Marquette when it mattered most, or even Creighton for that matter. The 1-point loss to Creighton back in January is probably going to be the difference of why they didn't get in, which sucks. But I really think at 20-13, 11-9 in the Big East, and you losing the Big East championship by 5 points to UConn, in my opinion, you got to go. And these guys declined the NIT invite. Typical Patino, man. Yeah, typical Patino, man.
I watched it many, many years ago, watched St. John's. They were like a middling 500 team, beat number one UConn in the Garden. That was courtside. It was one of the coolest experiences I've been at, like a live event. It was great.
Now, committee chair Charles McSealand says that talking to other committee members, this was the most difficult selection process that they've ever been a part of for March Madness. The bid thieves stole the show, they said, though, crushing Oklahoma, Seton Hall, Pitt, and others. But one thing that is interesting to note that John Fanta, he reports for NCAA basketball a lot. He said for the first time in 45-year history of the Big East Conference, a team went over 5 games, over 500 in conference play, and did not make the NCAA tournament. This team was Seton Hall.
Yeah, only 3 teams in the Big East.
Yeah,
it's wild.
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but like Seton Hall wasn't that good. You know, I like St. John's resume over Seton Hall.
All right. Well, this is the question now that both of you have been anticipating to answer. You have 1 minute each, and yes, I will use the bell on you. 1 minute to say your final four your sleeper pick, and who you think is going to win March Madness.
My final four is this: UConn, hardest road, but they'll be tested early on after they absolutely dismantle Stetson. Dan Hurley has brought this team back to a powerhouse. Tristan Newton, Cam Spencer, Alex Caravan, Donovan Klingon. This team's poised to make another run. Houston, hands down, best defensive team in this tournament. Big 12 title game, either a warning sign for Houston or a coming out party for Iowa State, could possibly be both. I do like Houston as to get to the Final Four. Arizona can score with anyone. Caleb Love and Umar Ballo don't play well. This team can get bounced. Don't be surprised if they get bounced in the Sweet 16. Purdue, easiest road. Zach Edey, absolute monster, averaging a double-double with three others in double figures. My sleepers, Colorado, 8-1 their last nine. KJ Simpson is an absolute bucket. NC State, you just dismantled Duke, Virginia, and UNC to make the tournament. Keep them on your radars. National champ, UConn repeats, and in my opinion, they're the best team in college basketball.
Final four here, UConn, number one overall seed for a reason. They're the best team in the country. They're going to go in against North Carolina. The ACC tourney loss is going to be the fuel that they need. You know, they thought they'd walk all over a rival, and they got stunned by NC State. They've sustained a couple losses this year, but those losses are what's going to propel them into the championship. Houston, one of the best offenses in the country when they're humming, they got absolutely exposed by Iowa State, only scoring 40 points. Is this going to be the catalyst or the downfall for Houston? I think this is going to be the catalyst for them. And then Creighton, Schellerman, Kalbrenner, and Alexander is the best scoring trio in the country, in my opinion, all scoring over 17 a game. But I think it's the North Carolina Tar Heels. They lost to UConn already this year, but they're going to beat them in the Final Four and then beat Houston in the championship. Sleeper, it's the fighting Brigham Youngs. Give me BYU. They shoot a ridiculous amount of three-pointers. I think they get hot at the right time. And when the offense is humming, nobody's going to beat them.
Awesome. Yeah, you did get that in under a minute, so great job to both of you. Put it down in the comments. Who do you think is going to be in the Final Four? Who's the sleeper? Who's going to go on that Cinderella run? Who's the underdog in this? And then finally, who is going to win March Madness in the end? It's going to be an exciting one for sure. March Madness will start March 19th, and we'll be sure to cover all the big moments. But one thing for sure is that there's going to be plenty of historic moments, buzzer beaters, upsets, underdogs this year, but why not? This is why we love this great tournament and why it's Houdini's favorite.
It is my favorite. And while I said to take all underdogs this year, when you start looking at the top two lines, it's hard to do. Yeah. Because I really do think the top two lines are without a doubt better than everybody else in this tournament.
I've filled out two brackets briefly, and I feel like I've taken upsets, but when it gets about the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, I go with the Blue Bloods. It's tough not to.
Yeah, I mean, dude, it just gets eliminated really quick. Like, obviously, North Carolina with Baycott and RJ Davis, like, it might be a really good 1-2 punch later on. I just don't see any way, and I don't want to shit on this parade, but when I start looking at these, like, 8, 9s, and 10s, let's just start with the 8 and 9s. When I see the 8 and 9s, and I'm like, oh, yeah, it's going to be a fun matchup. And then I see that they got to go up against UConn, Purdue, and like Arizona, like or whoever, Houston. I'm like, oh, my God.
Like, but Houdini, literally, every year there's an FAU. There's a George Mason, a Florida Gulf Coast. Every year there is.
Dude, I know.
But how do you pick them against UConn? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see it happening. Like I said, I think Arizona has the potential to make the Final Four. I think they have the potential to be one of the first big seeds that gets bounced. I see the same with North Carolina. It's going to be a fun tournament. But I will tell you, the 12-5 matchup is always good to watch. If you want to pick a 12-5 matchup, it's James Madison over Wisconsin.
Let's go. Yep.
JMU this year. I am shocked that they're a 12 seed. I think they went 29-4. Someone needs to fact check me on this, but like they're 29-4. And I know they play in a shit conference, but dude, when you go 29-4 and you're telling me I'm not even like top 48.
Yeah, that's tough.
Well, once again, that starts March 19th. Who am I? You have 30 seconds. Ooh. Go.
Girl or guy?
Guy.
Active or retired?
Active.
Sport?
Baseball.
You play or coach?
Player.
AL or NL currently?
NL.
Did you ever play in the AL?
I have.
NL West?
Nope. I have played there, but not right now.
Are you a pitcher or a hitter?
Hitter.
Are you in the NL East?
I am not.
So Central.
El Central then. Got it. You're a third baseman?
Nolan Arenado.
No, I am not.
I like where your head's at, Houdini. Goldschmidt.
Yeah.
No.
It's Bellinger. It's Bellinger.
No. Five seconds.
We're losing it, Dino.
Oh, shit.
Do you play the outfield?
I do.
From the Brewers. Okay. Churios.
I am not.
Okay, hold on. NL Central outfielder. So we're looking at
might not play outfield anymore, but I definitely am not playing outfield.
Outfield anymore. So we're looking more older career, possibly DH now. NL Central.
Brewers, Cubs,
Reds, Pirates.
Pirates.
Did he go Bucko Slammy?
Who's the other slapdick team in that division? I know
who it is.
You can't say anything. You already had your guess.
What if I defer my guess?
You cannot do that.
Well, why not?
Why not? Seen the fine print over here.
One guess.
But it's like, who wants to be a millionaire, dude? I'm deferring my guess.
This is like in beer pong back in college. There's no celeb shot right here.
There's no calling friends here.
Why not? Like, I defer my guess to him. If he gets it, he gets it. If he doesn't, it's over.
Fine. I just want to hear who you think it is, and then I'll give Deepaw the chance.
Well, I haven't even come up with somebody.
That's why he wants to defer it to
him. Dude, he looked at me and said he knows who it is.
I think I do.
All right, who is it, Deepaw?
Andrew McCutchen.
I am Andrew McCutchen.
Let's go. Oh, yeah. The best celeb shot ever. Let's go.
You couldn't think of that, Dean.
He was on my mind, but I was like, what does he mean? He doesn't like
anymore.
He doesn't play outfield anymore. I was like, who the only person that kept going into my head about this entire conversation was fucking Bryce Harper. And I knew for a fact it wasn't him, but I couldn't get him out of my mind.
Opening day is upon us, though. And there is a big topic that I want to talk about. Yoshinobu Yamamoto right now in spring training has not had the greatest, but a huge statistic that is very alarming has come to my attention. His batting average of balls in play is .517. That means more than half the time people are getting a hit when they hit the ball in fair territory.
Is that bad? I mean,
the fact that that's happening is extremely alarming because it's not like he's facing your top nine every day. So that's where like my cause of concern is a serious issue with Yamamoto. And I don't see this getting better. I mean, obviously it's going to get better, law of averages, but I see a problem here. I see a serious problem here.
Yeah, it's concerning because that number is so high. And I know I picked him as a dark horse for this NL Cy Young. So like you're seeing these type of numbers for, you know, the ace that they signed and what they expect him to be. And you bring up a great point, Houdini, not exactly against the regulars here. So do I think it's going to be that high of a number and he's going to struggle that bad? No, I think he's way too talented. And the numbers he put up in the Japanese league are phenomenal. I know it's a step up in hitting, but that number will go down and he's going to get so much run support. I don't think it's going to be too much of an issue long term. But I think I brought it up and not to keep going on it, but I think I brought it up on a previous podcast. If he starts off slow, what is going to happen? Like, and that's the Dodgers in general, but him specifically, if he gets shelled in those first couple starts, you know, 5 or 6, 7 ERA, what is that mental part of the game really going to wear on
him? Yeah, I think what's worth noting, I don't think that this ever will happen to him, but he can't be demoted to the minor leagues as part of his contract, which was very interesting. Obviously, when we all thought about this originally, it was like, well, he's never going to because this dude's filthy, but you know, we've seen countless times again, and I get it. It's spring training. Pitchers try different things, try different pitches. So am I totally hitting the panic button? You know, I'm looking at it. I'm glaring at it. I might, you know, hover my hand around it, see what if it's warm.
See where it is.
But,
yeah,
but I'm not pressing it yet. But if I'm a Dodgers fan, I am scared, though. We talked about it before. This rotation is going to rely on Yamamoto a whole lot. Clayton Kershaw, Glasnow, record of being hurt. Ohtani can't pitch. Walker Buehler coming off TJ. You don't know what you're getting out of him. James Paxton, they signed. History of shoulder problems. I mean, and we're not even talking about the lineup, too. Max Muncy, overrated strikeout machine. Gavin Lux returning from an ACL tear. I mean,
this guy This guy hates the Dodgers.
I'm just stating fact. Nothing that I said there was a opinion. That was all factual.
But no, I'm surprised he hates them. They're the West Coast Yankees, man.
Yeah, saying that Muncy's overrated is an opinion.
Yes, but he is a strikeout machine and bats like 200 every year. He's the West Coast version of Giancarlo Stanton.
Right, but we are in no position to critique hitters for striking out.
Me like personally?
You and I. No, me and you.
Oh, because like we're Yankee fans. I get you. I thought like me. I was like, yeah, I probably could. Yeah, I'd probably strike out a lot if I went up there, but I'm not getting paid $30 million a year to hit.
That's not what I meant. Like, obviously, like you give me and you 1,000 ABs in a year, we might get 3 hits. Like, we might. But once again, we don't get paid. So, yeah, if you need a couple guys to hit 0.001 and do it for free, like, we'll do it. It's basically the Aaron Hicks.
I'm your guy.
I'm curious to see how the Dodgers react to that. They are starting their opening day on March 20th against the Padres in South Korea. So that's something exciting to watch if you are a baseball fan. Tune
into
that.
Is he slated to throw there?
I believe so.
That's going to be lit.
Yeah, that's going to be crazy.
Kind of brings us to our next thing that we're talking about here. Players are still left as free agents right now, and they're not going anywhere on opening day as of now, with less than 5 days until opening day when the Dodgers will play against the Padres in Korea. Jordan Montgomery, Blake Snell, JD Martinez, Michael Lorenzen, Brandon Belt, Mike Clevenger, and so many others are still left unsigned. This is crazy. I don't think we've ever seen something like this happen before. It has happened multiple times where players have not signed into spring training, but never 5 days away until opening day. I mean, these guys aren't going to get any reps. I feel like if Blake Snell signs with someone, he's going to have to go to the minors to have his like warm up. You can't just throw him in the majors.
I think your top end free agents are a little different. Like I think Snell and Monty would probably be fine, but I agree with what you're saying. Pitchers are a little different because like their arms are probably still conditioned, but like these hitters who haven't hit in a live game in a minute, and live ABs are completely different if it's indoors, outdoors, whatever it is. It's weird seeing top free agents not on a team right now, and it's unfortunate, but at the same time it's also a blessing for some of these teams that are going to deal with some injuries early on that might have to address a need. And some of those teams might be teams you didn't expect, which is kind of adds an interesting element to the first couple weeks of the season.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Scott Boras effect. You know, he may not represent all of them, but the style of agenting that he exhibits and has filtered down through the rest of the league is on full display right there, Jedi. It's absolutely preposterous that much talent is still not to be signed 5 days away from the start of the MLB season. I kind of disagree with you, Houdini, on the pitching aspect of it. Those live reps are just as important and just as real as in like you can't replicate them as an AB is. So yeah, you might be throwing 90, 100 pitches in a bullpen, but like nothing's going to simulate what it's going to be like in an actual game. So I think it's crazy that these guys still aren't signed right now. And unfortunately, it's just the sign of the times. That's the agent that he's wearing right now.
Yeah, and you mentioned Scott Boras. He is the agent of Jordan Montgomery, Blake Snell, and JD Martinez. He may even be more.
Matt Chapman Chapman only signed a couple weeks ago too. Like this, it's ridiculous.
Allow me to clarify what I mean by like pitchers. Is I'm not talking about any. I'm talking top tier pitchers. Like Monty just won the World Series. Snell's the reigning NL MVP. I think those two guys, I'm sorry, I think those two guys have an advantage right now in the sense of getting on the field and producing. However, they're not going to have an advantage when it comes to contract talks because it's going to be a bridge deal. It's going to be a 1 or 2 year thing with a player opt out after one.
It's a great point, and I wanted to ask you guys this question. If you put yourself in Blake Snell's shoes right now, right? You just won the NL Cy Young. You're the best free agent on the market, best free agent pitcher on the market. You still haven't signed right now. How pissed are you at your agent? I don't know what offers he's received. Maybe eventually that leaks out. But how pissed are you right now? He's a competitor. He's a dog. He wants to pitch. wants to sign with a team, and it's just nothing right now.
I'm 10 out of 10 pissed, to be honest.
Like, I would be heated. I don't know what is, how long he's had Boris, how much, what his career earnings are looking like, but I'm sure Jordan Montgomery's isn't crazy. It's way less than Blake Snell's. I'd be pissed right now.
I mean, it kind of goes back to like what I've watched the Braves do, like the Ozzie Albies deal.
Amazing.
Is absurd, right?
Even but Austin at the same Riley time, great.
Yeah, like both of those deals, like when you're looking at it from the team aspect, it's an absurd steal. But also, like, they're still getting financial security for life, right? So I don't know what the number Snell is looking for. If it's extremely high, then it's a little swayed based on his performance last year, because we've seen it go a couple different ways with him.
Jekyll and Hyde, yep.
Yeah, so I do feel like he is a victim of inconsistencies. And if I'm paying $300 million, $400, $450, $500, whatever the dollar amount is, I just need consistency. And that's where I think the Yanks have gone wrong with going and getting guys like Paxton, Rodon, trying to find a dominant lefty, when in reality you're paying Nestor, what, $5 or $6 million? You know what I mean? So I don't know. I feel like Snell's in a tough spot. And it's going to be a 1 or 2 year deal, and it's not going to be for what he wants. And guess what? If he doesn't perform, he's not going to get that big time contract that you would expect after a Cy Young performance. This was the year that he was supposed to get paid.
Exactly.
Didn't happen. I'd be pissed.
That, yeah, honestly, I mean, that's when you capitalize on the biggest moment of your career.
Correct.
At this point, I almost question, is he injured? Why are teams so hesitant? Because at this point, I don't think it's the money thing anymore. Mm. Because yes, maybe he's asking for an absurd amount of money, but we've seen like a random team, like the Angels, usually come out of nowhere and just give, like, you know what I mean? Like, somebody was willing to give him money.
Think about it, Jedi. What was Yamamoto's deal?
300 or 310 for 10 years.
31 million bucks a year. Hasn't pitched in the pros. This guy's the NL Cy Young. There's no way, if you're his agent, and this is where I see the flip side. If I'm his agent, there's no way I'm taking anything less.
There's no way that he's getting 300. There's no way he's getting more than 100 million. Zero shot.
I agree with you. I'm just saying, based on the season, if I was Blake Snell and I put up that year, and now I'm a free agent, and you just gave $310 million to a guy that hasn't pitched in the pros, and I'm the Cy Young of the NL, I want what he got. Regardless of the years, I want 31 mil a year or more.
No, I get you, and I agree with you from that mindset. But, like, do I actually think he's going to get it? I mean, the Astros were in big talks about signing him, but they have backed away as of now because of the asking price is still astronomical, according to these baseball clubs. I believe the Astros offered him somewhere around like $23 million a year for 2 years with an opt-out, and he wants $33 million per year, 2 years with an opt-out after 1 year. So, I mean, it looks like he definitely lowered his asking price. What I'm curious to know, though, is that if I recall correctly, I believe the Yankees offered him $60 million for 2 years in January, and I'm guessing he declined that. So now it's like, that's what you're asking. So his asking price has gone down quite a lot then.
Yeah, and I
just looked up his career earnings real quick. He's made, less than $50 million in his career. So the last couple of years have been pretty high for him. I mean, he's asking for an absurd amount of money.
Yeah, and I when he comes down to it, though, like, do I feel bad? No, because he has $50 million more than I do. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I understand his frustrations for sure. All that hard work that you put in, and I see Houdini make a great point with the Yamamoto signing, and he's the actual NL Cy Young. We don't know how Yamamoto is going to do. We were just talking about how his batting average of balls put in play is over 500. You can go watch that on YouTube if you're watching from there. But I don't know. I don't think that he actually, let me ask you this real quick. Do you think any of these players, well, not any, do you think Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell signed by opening day?
No.
Zero share.
No, no.
Do you think they sign this season?
Yes. I think a team gets desperate enough that they're forced to.
Houdini touched on it. Yeah. And a big injury. And I really hope Garrett Cole pitches this year and it isn't a big injury, but another big injury will happen and one of those guys it'll almost give a little bit more leverage to Boris, and one of those teams will get desperate who has title aspirations.
We shall see then. I'm interested to see. Drop down in the comments, when do you think Jordan Montgomery, Blake Snell, or JD Martinez is going to sign? Is it going to be before or after opening day?